I remember that I was, you know, in my room, I was trying to overcome everything, really surrender my life, my purpose, my reason to live, what I wanted to be. Because I remember that during 2020, we were barely working in the law firm with my dad because everything had been shut down. And so things wasn't going very well. So I made the isolated decision that I didn't have that much to do really pushed me, you know, towards him, to see him. I was still looking for to do something else, to go and try to find something else to do. And I wanted to do a doctorate. I was thinking, well, maybe if I do this, that's going to fulfill me. And I remember that I told Tori about this. And she was my friend at the time. And she told me, do you think that that's going to really fulfill you? So she told me, no, you surrender. Surrender your life. Keep surrendering to how you're living. Even though if you fall again, just go back to him. And he will help you to overcome whatever, you know, any kind of sin you are dealing, any kind of addiction you are dealing. He will help you to overcome that. But what I didn't do in the past was, you know, when I fall, I thought that, well, he's mad with me.
Yeah.
He's not going to hurt me again. So that put me like far from him again, living the kind of life that I wasn't supposed to live. But this time when I really surrendered everything, I was like, okay, you know, even though if I fall again, I'm going to come back to him. And I did it.
You are now listening to Testimonies with Terry.
Hey, what's up, guys, and welcome back to another episode of Testimonies with Terry. I'm your host, Terry Skaggs, and on this episode, I'm going to be talking with a guy who has been on quite the journey in coming to know Jesus. And just a heads up, he was soft-spoken at times in the interview, and he admits his English is still a work in progress. So if you're having any problems hearing or understanding him, make sure to check out the transcription of this interview on your podcast player because, again, this guy's testimony is awesome and he truly has a heart of gold. You're going to hear what his life was like growing up in Mexico and dreaming of becoming a soccer star. He got super close to being called up to the top professional league in Mexico, but you're going to hear what stopped that from happening. Trying to find meaning and purpose in his life, he tells us the role that his parents and his now wife, Victoria, who you guys heard back on season 3, played in helping him surrender his life to Christ. He gives us the details on how his friendship with Victoria evolved into them getting married, and he walks us through how, shortly after getting married, a car wreck almost took his life. And you guys are going to be absolutely amazed at the redemption and healing God did in his life during that time. So stick around all the way to the end of the episode. You're not going to want to miss it. It is incredible. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, this is Rob Sosa's testimony. All right, everyone. Well, I'm excited because on this episode, I'm talking to missionary with Crave, husband and brand new father, Rob Sosa. Rob, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Terry, for having me. And just this invitation is such an honor for me. I'm just so thankful with you and your show and everything what you are doing. It's just a wonderful opportunity. And just thank you so much.
Yeah. You know, it's really just cool how the Holy Spirit works. I interviewed your wife, Victoria, back in season 3. So I think that might have been probably 2 years ago now, coming up on 2 years, maybe a year and a half. And at that time, she was newly married to you. And so I've been following you and keeping up with her on social media. And I think it was just a couple weeks ago where she had posted on Instagram just about you. It was kind of a brag post about how awesome you are and just how you have such an amazing testimony. And I just commented on it and I just said, huh, you know, maybe he needs to come on the show and share it. And she was just like, yeah, you know, he should. And so I reached out and you were gracious enough to accept the invitation. And yeah, man, I'm just really looking forward to getting to know you over this next, well, however long the Holy Spirit wants this to be.
Right. Yeah, awesome. Yeah, she told me about that when we just got married. I remember that time. She told me, hey, this friend is inviting me to be on his show. I was, oh, wow, awesome. And I was like, wow, we were new. I was pretty much, you know, I started really following Jesus in a radical way, maybe 2021, when I decided to give my life, you know, completely. But, you know, I think in the way we usually give our life to Jesus so many times, you know, when you have a family, when you grew up in a family that they're Christians and they take you to church or friends or whatever, you know, you usually give this step of faith in the way that you say, oh yeah, I want to follow him, but you don't really do it. So, you know, it comes from your mouth, but not from your heart.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that time when I really wanted to, I was like, you know, I'm done. I cannot make it without him. I've been trying. I feel nothing is good enough, and nothing is working out. And I just, that day, I think it was 2021 when I decided give my life to Jesus in a radical way, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing all about that day. Obviously, that's a monumental day in your life, Rob. But I always like to start way at the beginning and really get to know the person's whole story here. So, Rob, tell us a little bit about where did you grow up and what was family life like for you as you were growing up?
Well, I grew up in Villahermosa, Tabasco, Mexico. I was there the most of the time until I turned maybe 18 years old. When I moved to a different city because I was playing soccer. I was a professional soccer player at the time. So I had to move maybe around 18, 19. Then I decided to leave that life and play soccer for a while. So I lived in a different cities for maybe a few years or maybe less than that. I don't remember very well. My parents were Christians. Times I can remember, but you know, they weren't really radical. I mean, believing, you know, they believe, but not like at the time. I mean, when I grew up, they weren't pastors. They're pastors now, but they really weren't pastors. But of course, I grew up in a Christian environment. But for some reasons, I stepped a little bit away because I was always kind of like the rebellious kind of guy that I didn't want to really follow the rules, or I didn't really want to follow what they were telling me. Or, I mean, I was obedient all the time to them, and I had all this time the fear of them and God, I think, because, you know, there is something that keeps you to do stuff that you shouldn't be doing. And then when you do it, you really feel regret about it. So that's, I mean, I think the Holy Spirit that is in you when you accept Jesus and since you are a little guy. So yeah, I grew up, you know, pretty much in a Christian environment. Yeah.
And did you have any siblings at all, Rob?
Yeah, I do have a brother. His name is Cesar. He's a doctor. So he's now doing his specializing in something about, I don't know, he had to go back to school for maybe 4 years more.
So are you the older brother or the younger brother?
Yes, I am the older brother.
The older brother. So what has that been like, being the older brother?
Well, now when I look back, and of course, because he saw me growing up in this kind of way, when I had to leave home around when I was pretty young and I had to live far from him, he saw quite a few things from me, like a leader, you know, because you always follow the older guy in the family, mostly your brother. So it was a huge responsibility that I didn't realize. And of course, at this time, I'm trying to teach him, you know, the kind of life that I am right now. And he follows Jesus, but he's not still in that deep way, like I feel I am right now. Of course, there is more deeper levels, I think. But yeah, I feel it was a responsibility to take care of him and just, you know, give him a really good example. But I remember that one day during 2020, when I had to come home because I mean, at the time during 2020, of course, it was a switch in the environment, in the world.
Yeah, with COVID.
I remember, COVID, everything was closed down. I had to come back home. And I wasn't like in a really good position with God or anything. I was lost, honestly. I remember that the Lord used him to minister to me and telling me, you know, making me realize the kind of life that I was living. And that was like, wow, you're right. I mean, I'm not doing it right. I need to come back to God and try to do it better. I felt like, wow, you can really lead me as well, because I want to try to do it, but I'm not making it. I hadn't been a really good example for you. And then you have to come and tell me what to do. It's like, well, that was like a spank, you know, like, yeah, you have to do it better.
Yeah. I would imagine it was maybe like humbling, you know, hearing that coming from your younger brother. Like you said, right. Usually as the older brother, you're the one tasked with setting the example. And now you come home and he's just like, hey, big bro, like, you know, I don't know about the way you're living. Yeah. Maybe you want to rethink that. So that's really cool. And it's cool that you, even as a kid, like you kind of just felt that responsibility, like, hey, I'm the older brother. I do need to set a good example here. What was kind of the family dynamic like for you, Rob? Was your family always like really close, or did everyone just kind of go and do their own thing? What was that like?
Well, we were very close. I mean, we were a family of four, my dad, my mom, Cesar and I, we were close. I mean, we're still close, you know? Yeah, I think it was a really good, healthy environment that I had the really good opportunity to grow up. But as I was telling you, I was kind of like the rebellious guy who I wanted to do what I wanted to do. So that's why I went out and started playing soccer. And then I was just trying to do what I thought it was right to do, what the world was telling me that it was right to do it, but it wasn't. So,
yeah, you know, I think we all go through that stage where we try to figure out what's best for us, right? And yeah, if we're not really walking with the Lord, then we're just going to follow after what, you know, our flesh and our heart is telling us and what the world is telling us. So yeah, like Rob, you mentioned a couple of times that you were kind of rebellious, and like, were you that way all throughout your childhood, or did that just kind of kick in during your teenage years?
I think that kicked into the teenage years when I was, you know, playing soccer. I didn't really want to follow what the coach were telling me to do. I was that kind of guy. My nature, my personality, that I'm now, when I see it, you know, I think the Lord puts these kind of personalities in you because he want to use it for his kingdom, you know, to use it for his glory. And, you know, maybe not following the rules, because I didn't want to follow it. Rather, I thought I was always right. I was always right. Always try with what to do, and I always thought that I was doing it right, and I knew better than everybody that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't truth. But that was pretty humbling during the period that I realized that. And it's like, well, that's just when you see it right now, the reason why, and it's very, very interesting that when he put in you those kind of personalities, is because there is a reason. And now I have a radical life that nobody wants to follow. I mean, a lot, but not like the kind of people who I grew up with, you know, friendships and stuff like that. I mean, friends like that, they're like, oh, what kind of life are you living now? And I'm like, yeah, I'm living the best life ever.
Amen.
But yeah, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, for sure, man, for sure. Yeah, Where do you think that, I don't know how you described it, it almost kind of sounds maybe like you were a cocky teenager, maybe arrogant. And again, I think some of us, or most of us, as we go through that teenage stage, I think we all kind of have that at some level, you know, just that we think we're right. We think we know it all. We think what's best for us. So do you think it was it just that, or did you have anyone in your life, like looking back at it, that maybe kind of had that example? Like, was anyone in your family kind of that way, or any of your buddies at school where you just kind of took after that? Or would you say it was just Rob being a teenager?
Probably. I just wanted to be cool and, you know, better than everybody, I think, which is, was kind of silly. And now I see the kind of guy that I was, and it's like, oh, boy, that shouldn't have done that in that way, because it's not how we are supposed to live. It's like we are supposed to serve, not to be, not trying to be, you know, because when you are trying to make yourself bigger than everybody, there it comes, the spine, and then you go way deep and down than anyone else. So it's very humbling realizing that part. Of course, when you are playing soccer, you think you are the best, you know, you're because you are in a position where you have accommodations, you travel, you go to play. I mean, your life is only soccer. It's only playing. It's only the professional kind of style. And you see those examples from the TV, from the, you know, friends that they make it to the next level. And you're, oh, yeah, I want to be like them. But then when the football, the soccer ends, I fell into depression because I really put my trust in all in the sports. That is kind of silly as well. So it's like, oh, what did I do that? But anyway, I fell in the position when I had to pretty much quit the soccer, the professional life, because I felt that I wasn't making it, even though I had played in so many, a few teams, but I felt that I wasn't making it. And I was getting older, maybe around the 20s. And I thought, well, I need to start doing something else that is going to secure my life in the future, that I to have a, you know, a better future or the purpose of my life, because if it wasn't the soccer, what else would it be? So I joined my lawyer career, and I had to be in law school for maybe around 4 years. And praise God, I made it. And then I had the opportunity to move to a different state again to do a master in business. And they gave me a scholarship because the soccer. So I made that, I achieved that. It was, you know, it was pretty incredible. And that was the time where, I mean, after the soccer finished, I fell in this deep position where I wanted to change something. And I did quite a few things, but I really didn't change. I came back with God, you know, for him to give me what I wanted. And once he did it, I went away again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
We usually do that all the time. So it's like, man. And then I had to leave. I was far from here for maybe a few years more. It's just, you know, part of the life, the walking where... But when you see now, you know, the past is like, wow, I mean, everything has a reason, you know?
Right, for sure. And I mean, man, you touched on a lot of things there, Rob. I mean, the soccer career, and then you started talking about your career in law, which I really want to hear about that. But I just kind of want to dig into more of the soccer side of your story here. So, Rob, can you remember like when you first fell in love with the game of soccer?
I was very little, maybe 5 years old, 6 years old. I remember I had an uncle and, of course, my little fellows. We love to play soccer, and it's a huge deal in Mexico. It's like, and it's like maybe here you guys have, well, you guys have multiple sports that are huge. But I don't know, maybe the football here, you know, it's a huge deal. So soccer down there is the... the biggest. I mean, if you want to be famous, you want to be in the TV, you want to just, you know, have the kind of lifestyle that they have. That is not a really godly life. Well, mostly there are a few ones that are Christians. But yeah, I mean, I was very little when I wanted to start playing soccer. Of course, my dad played soccer for a little bit. I mean, I think he reached professional, but not as much as I did. But yeah, I mean, just seeing my dad playing and my little fellows, it was just part of my environment.
Yeah. Were you someone who, did you have to work really hard to get to the skill level that you had with soccer, or did soccer just kind of come naturally to you?
Well, that's kind of interesting because, of course, I wanted to be like a play in a position in the field. I wasn't really meant to be a goalkeeper. And I remember one day I was maybe around 16. I was like, kind of they call it the reserve. Like, they are not even registered. They are not even, you know, part of the team. They're just there trained to reach the professional, you know, kind of level.
Yep.
And I was trained to be like, to play in the field at defense. I wasn't really good. And I was very skinny, very, very skinny. Yeah. Tall and skinny. And I was pretty weak, honestly. And the last day of the it was like kind of like the last week of the team season, and I remember the coach told me like, "Hey, do you want to try like a goalkeeper? Just here in training, they were having like a little, you know, game between the same team, you know, like just training." I was like, I had been a goalkeeper during my childhood, and it was pretty good, I think. That's what they were telling me. I don't know. Well, I tried. And then I did like a really two good locks with the ball. And then at the end of the training, the coach came to me and asked me, "Hey, have you ever been a goalkeeper?" I was like, "Yeah, when I was, you know, little, I was a goalkeeper and I really like it, but I was trying to do something else that I was supposed to do, you know?" And he told me, like, he made me an offer. He was like, "Well, if you do the preseason with us as a goalkeeper and you train very hard, and if I, you know, I'm going to train you to be a goalkeeper, I'm just giving you tips, you know, just the goalkeeper kind of training that you need. And if you are talented enough to be in the professional team, you're going to be registered at the end of the summer." That happened, I don't know, maybe around March or April, you know. It was like the preseason lasts for maybe 2 months. I had to train for 2 months to be a goalkeeper. And it was like, okay, yeah, I'll try. And well, it just came, and then and in 2 months, I was registered as a professional.
In 2 months, you were registered as a professional?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Wow. Like, so yep. I'll be completely transparent with you, Rob. I don't know a whole lot about soccer in Minnesota. It's not a big sport. I've been to one of our professional teams games and I had a lot of fun, but I don't know a whole lot about soccer. And so you just said you kind of tried out to become the goalkeeper. You got it. And within 2 months you were professional. Like, is that common, or is that like unheard of for someone to go to professional that quickly?
Well, it's not that easy. Even though it looks like it is easy, even though if you start like in a low level, that it was at the time they had, I think, three levels, professional levels, or maybe four. They have the third division, the second division, the first division before the main one. I think they call first division A, and then first division that is like the MLS, you know, here. Yep. Yeah, it was like the very low, the lowest one maybe. But yeah, I met so many friends, you know, fellows that they tried and then didn't make it, and they were in the reserve, they were trying to, you know, make themselves for the coach to be seen and just to be picked out. But they didn't make it. Mm-hmm. Most of them, they just quit. And where I'm from, in the area, my neighborhood, I remember that the first time that I went to try out, I went with maybe a group of friends. There were probably 10 or more, and all of them quit. They didn't make it to professional.
So how old would you have been, Rob, when you first made it professional?
Around 16.
16 years old. Wow. So I'm trying to put myself in your shoes. I mean, here you are, this 16-year-old guy, and you just made it professional in soccer. And, you know, you already kind of talked about how kind of around your teenage years, you were more, you know, kind of cocky and arrogant, like a lot of teenagers are. Did going professional, did that kind of inflate your ego even more? Just like, okay, yeah, now I, you know, I'm not just saying I'm good. Like, even other people are saying, like, I'm good. Like, I'm the stuff here. Like, yeah. Was it kind of like that for you?
Yeah. I mean, I think it started once I joined the professional soccer, that it was like, you know, just think you are the best of the best, but
sure,
it's not that way. Sure. It's just like, but I think it's part of growing up and realizing, but mostly it's like, what if would have give my life to Jesus since the beginning, you know, and just living this humbly life. And even though you have talents, it can be used for his glory and for him to, you know, maybe to reach the people who is around you, you know? But yeah, I mean, that I think that didn't help. And then I went to try another team and they picked me as well. And then I joined different teams and I reached the team that I was very close, you know, that I told you about the MLS, you know, the kind of, that is the main league.
Yeah.
Well, I got picked from one of those teams to be in they call it like the 20s division, that pretty much has a goalkeeper. You are in the 20s divisions with them, training with the 20s, because they are the 20s, but you are almost there. You train, sometimes you train with the big guys. And I met so many, you know, players that they all were in the main league. They all were playing in the national league, if you want to call it like that. As a goalkeeper, I had to train with the main guys, with the goalkeepers that were in the huge divisions, that now they're playing one of the most popular teams. It's like, wow. I mean, you are right there. But something happened that when I was coming back to what I was telling you, you know, that sometimes we look for him to get what we want, you know, to accomplish our dreams and not his dreams. So I remember that in the 20s, I joined them. I was just like a one step to jump into the main league. I mean, just to jump right there and just being seen by everybody.
Yeah, so close to making it to the big leagues.
I was very, very close. And I remember I did the preseason. They picked me. They wanted me in the team. And also, they wanted me to be the main goalkeeper, you know, in the low division from the main guys. So because they have, you know, like they have their own tournament. But they play at the same time, like the big guys, so they travel together. Everywhere. You are just right there. You are close together with them. You train with them. You do games with them. The training. I did the preseason. I was in really good shape. I remember that at the time I was trying to be very disciplined, reading my Bible and trying to find God in this time, and also I was student law at the same time, because my parent, you know, he told me, well, once you start law school, you're gonna finish. I was like, okay, I don't know how I'm gonna make it, because I'm training two times a day and then going to school for 4 or 5 hours. It was very, very it was wearing me out so much.
Yeah.
Well, I got sick from stomach infection, and the doctors couldn't find what it was. So that really put me down, because I was, the tournament I was about to start, like maybe a week before that I got sick, and I had to be in bed for, I don't know, a month.
Oh, wow.
I had a bad fever. I had a bug infection. They didn't know what it was. That just put me down. I mean, and then, of course, if you don't give them what they need as a professional, because they're investing in you, they kick you out at 6 months. So they did it. I was like, yeah, but it wasn't my fault. And, you know, I was pretty frustrated. So I think because all of that happened, that also put me a little afar, you know, from God. Like, why? Why did you do this? Mm-hmm. Like, I was following you. I was reading my Bible. I was praying. I was trying to do it right. And then, because when we think we're doing things right, he should bless us. But it doesn't work that way, you know, because you are really just doing to get something back.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. So I want to put this into perspective for a lot of the listeners here. So, you know, Rob, your situation was basically the equivalent. So again, I'm in Minnesota. The Minnesota Vikings are our football team. So basically you were on the practice squad and you were in line to make the regular season roster, finally make it to the big times. But before that could happen, you were right there. You got sick. And you were down for a month. And as you said, like these teams, these coaches, they're investing in you. And if you're not giving them anything in return, it's pretty yeah. easy for them to kind of just view you as a number and be like, all right, you're cut. And yeah. So close to achieving your dream. And then it's just taken away from you. And like you said, really to no fault of your own. I mean, you got sick, you got that disease. You couldn't really help that, but man, I can't imagine what that would feel like, Rob. I mean, you mentioned earlier, like you had gone through a depression. Is that when the depression started? Is after your soccer dream ended, so to speak?
Yeah. Yeah, that was like a very hard moment. Fortunately, I played for maybe a year more and I made it to the second division that they call it like the talented division. And I had to move to a different city and I played there for maybe one year more. But then after that time end, the time came where I have to decide what to do with my life, because I was 21 years old and they tell you, you have to be young to make it. You know, you have to be very young to make it to the big leagues, you know, to the main league. You have to be in the 20s to be with those teams. Which I had been with them, you know, just being that close. And then when the time came where I have to decide what to do with my life, either taking the lawyer career, because I wasn't really making it either with the lawyer career, because I had to stop so many times because I couldn't do it both. It was too much. Yeah. I was trying to be professional. Yeah. I was trying to study, to go to school. It was a lot. So the time came because, you know, they tell you, well, if you don't follow the rules, if you don't decide what to do, you're not going to make it in life. So I had to quit and join the lawyer career. So I was pretty much, when I took that decision to quit the professional around 21, 22, I fell into a huge depression time where I couldn't get out for maybe 6 months. It was because that was my dream. That was my purpose in life. Like soccer was everything. And it was, you know, it was my world to me.
What did that look like, Rob? You know, I'm a marriage and family therapist. And so I work with a lot of people that struggle with depression. And for you, what did that depression look like?
Well, I couldn't get up from bed. I was just there in my house, living. I wasn't really going to school. I was alone, insulated, just watching stuff that I shouldn't have watched, shows, and just doing nothing for my life.
Yeah. Yeah. And you said that went on for 6 months. What helped you get out of that? How did you eventually come out of that depression?
Well, my parents. My parents, they were Christian. They were fighting. They were praying for me. And at the time, I didn't want to choose because I was full of pride. And I felt that God did that to me, that it wasn't really truth, you know? I was like, what did you do this to me? Like, why did you kick me out from soccer when I was about to make it, when I was just right there? Just one step to make it to, but it wasn't really the purpose, you know, because I wasn't really following him. I was just following him because, you know, what I want him to give him back to me because I deserve it.
Yeah.
You know, that is not truth. So, yeah, I mean, my parents, they prayed a lot and they helped me to overcome that depression time, to achieve my lawyer career. And then I remember that I moved to Puebla, that is another city. I had to move again to accomplish my master, which it was pretty kind of interesting to me because I hadn't been playing soccer for maybe 3.5 years during the period of time that I was doing my lawyer career. And a friend of mine was living in Puebla. And he told me, hey, there are several opportunities to join a master if you play soccer. And if you are, you know, if you play, if you are ex-professional, I think they're going to pick you. You should try those. In Puebla, it's like a city where there are so many universities. You know, so many college, different college. So it's very popular to have give a scholarship to students if they are talented in any kind of sport. So I went to try out and they picked me to do my master. I was like, oh, wow, awesome. They're going to give me, they're going to pay my whole master. They gave me like 90% off.
Wow.
After 6 months, they gave me food. Sometimes they give you a place to live, but they couldn't do it because they couldn't afford it. But I was like, okay, sweet. I'm going to be here 2 years and doing my master in business and playing soccer for a little bit more. I mean, it's not like a professional kind of league, but it's still, it's pretty good. I mean, they have so many ex-professional soccer as well that they don't make it for some reason. They go to join those kind of schools to get a scholarship and just do their career.
Wow. So you did that in order to finish up your master's degree. And man, that's so cool how God, you know, even at that time, it doesn't sound like you had given your life to the Lord yet, but God still opened up that opportunity where he knew that you loved soccer and he knew obviously, you know, the professional dream. That door had closed, but he still kind of gave you this avenue to still do what you enjoy while you're getting a master's degree. And obviously, like you said, the benefits of that, I mean, you got it, what I think you said, 90% off, and then you got, you know, your food and stuff too. Like, that's a pretty sweet deal. So I just see the goodness of God even right there.
Yeah. And I'm going to tell you something. That is, that time, that's when the Lord really started working on me, you know, he was trying to find me. I remember that it's a Methodist university. They're Christians. And I remember that, I don't know if they are all of them Christians, but mostly, you know, teachers and stuff. I didn't know that. I had no idea. So when I joined the team, I did the preseason. Of course, we were about to start the tournament. And this guy came. He is an evangelist. He is now my friend. And he was like my mentor for a while. I mean, he really helped me to come out from that darkness, from that place where I was. And I remember that before we started the tournament, this guy came and, you know, he came to pray for us who were wanting to receive Jesus. And, you know, just to give us a speech before the tournament and what was most important. And I was like, wow. He is knocking my door, you know, he's knocking my door. I realized that I don't know. I mean, I believe that he moved me from Villahermosa, from my city again, to Puebla, just to meet my wife. Because that's the city where I met her.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, he moved me there. Of course, he prayed, and, you know, I had the opportunity to meet him, just to talk, share thoughts about it. But still, because Puebla is like a city, like a university city.
Like a party city? So
many, yes. So it's college, parties. So, of course, my fellows didn't help because I was with my best friends of life, you know, right there. I met so many people. I was just, you know, living the dream, playing college, now playing college, soccer, scholarship, this, master, whatever. It's like you are like just in a cloud. But after maybe a year and a half, I realized that I was now way deeper than I was before, than I had been before. So I was full with anxiety, now depression, at the point where my heart couldn't stop and I couldn't really have peace in the night in my room because I was living alone in an apartment that someone just gave me pretty much for free. But I was like, boy, that's when you realize that even when they tell you, you know, what the world can offer you, what you can get, it's not enough and it will never be enough. So I was doing what was my dream, you know, what was like play, have an achieve a new achievement, a new degree. But I wasn't really following him, even though he was working on me and he was showing his glory and his mercy as well. But I wasn't really following him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you're saying, Rob, that you kind of are living your dream. Like, you know, if dream 1A was I want to play soccer professionally, you know, dream 1B is, hey, I want to at least play soccer while I'm in college and, you know, as I'm getting the degree and just kind of, you know, living life the way that I want, you know, that's what you're doing. And it sounds like even in the midst of all that, you came to this realization that, wow, this is empty. Like, this isn't fulfilling.
Yeah.
This isn't mm-hmm. fulfilling.
Yeah,
me. And you said, you know, then you kind of went into another bout of depression and anxiety. And I'm curious, like, was the depression anxiety simply because, man, this isn't filling me. This isn't, you know, right. fulfilling me. What will? Is that what was causing the depression and anxiety?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that's what it was. Because I remember that, you know, of course, I did so many mistakes when I was living there. I wasn't really living a godly life. Parties, doing this, doing that. You know, when you start that kind of life, you think, oh, yeah. You know, I'm the main guy here. I'm the coolest guy. I'm just, you know, the kind of fellows that you have that make you feel and think you are the coolest guy ever because what you are doing, but you are really empty. You don't have anything in you that, you know, really fills you up and you are in your room crying all night long, feeling alone with your heartbeat going up all the time for no reason, but it's because what you had allowed to come when you don't realize, you know? I didn't know that until I got safe and really decided to really change my life. I remember that, of course, after I met my future wife, that I didn't know she was my future wife, I met her in a kind of like in a place. Well, it's kind of like in a place where you can go to dance, but also it's like a restaurant as well. It has like a separate area. She was working as an evangelist. I think she went to do evangelist work in the Puebla's mountains. So she had been there. And I met her. We couldn't speak because I didn't speak English at the time. So I tried to talk with her and she was, you know, tell her, hey, hello. And I realized she said, like, no, it's Spanish. I was like, oh, man. So I had to go away. But anyway, I met her and I could get in touch with her through a friend that knew one of her friends. I didn't know she would be my future wife because, you know, I was just doing a bunch of stuff.
So did you meet Victoria in this season of dealing with the depression and dealing with the anxiety, or was that after that?
yeah, I was still living, you know, my party life. I was still playing soccer. I was still in college. That's when I met her, but we couldn't talk.
Yeah.
We couldn't really communicate, you know. Then this friend sent me her profile and I went to follow her. And we start talking, but, you know, normal, like nothing really. I noticed that she was an evangelist. She was living a radical life for Jesus. And I remember at the time I thought like, oh, wow, she would be wonderful as a wife. But, you know, because her belief, and I knew my values. I knew my values. You know, something tells you like, hey, you have to come back. You have to get back to what you were doing, how you grew up. And this, you know, just follow with God and trying to godly life. I mean, you're not doing it. And I didn't feel good enough for her at the time because how I was living. But even though I realized that the Lord was with me during the period of time that I was lost, that everything that I did, it was for a reason, even doing my master, even when I moved to Puebla, when I met her, I mean, he was working. And now I see now what I did, all of that, because it relates to my life now, you know?
Yeah. And so yeah. Here you are, you're still in the midst of the party lifestyle, but you meet Victoria, your now wife, you're able to stay in contact with her over social media. And what kind of happens next, Rob?
Well, of course, we were talking, we were friends. I mean, she's friends talking. I noticed that she was an evangelist, like I told you. And she started teaching me quite a few things. We were just, you know, I was telling her about my depression, how I was feeling, just like a friend, you know. And I just wanted somebody to help me because I went to psychologist, didn't help. Then I thought moving to a different city would help me. So I moved to Mexico City and I was there for a little bit. Then COVID hit. And I had to come back to my place, to Villahermosa. And just relationships that wasn't really working out, and just a bunch of stuff that really made me realize that I have to come back. I have to do it right this time. I have to really realize that, hey, you know, because how we can easily get caught into this idea that you can do everything.
Yeah.
You can be whatever you want. You can accomplish and achieve all your dreams just because you have the power mind and can make it. You know, those kind of ideas that we have, new age and stuff like that. So I was like, no, that didn't help.
Right.
That's not true. Yeah. I tried. I was there. I come from that. So it's like, no, that doesn't help.
So at what point, Rob, did you finally come to surrender? At what point did you feel like, oh, you know, and you're kind of describing it now, like, I've tried all this stuff, it's not working, I need to go back to my values, to how I was raised. At what point did you finally just surrender all to Christ?
Well, I remember that I was in a place and I was trying to make him work out something with somebody because I knew it wasn't right. I knew it wasn't the right person either. I was just trying, you know, to make it work out. And she was kind of joking. And she told me like, well, you should get back to your God. Because, you know, when you are in this kind of life, you meet those kind of different kind of people who believe in not telling what. So, and you get caught in those kind of ideas of ideologies, kind of thought that, you know, you can make it, you know, through Buddha or, you know, whatever kind of religious you want to tell me. I remember that this person who was kind of in that kind of thing told me, you should go get back to your God and just have faith. You have faith. You know, she was kind of arrogant saying that and maybe joking.
Kind of like sarcastic.
But she made, yeah, sarcastic, but made me realize like, oh, that put me like in a position to think my life again. And I was, well, at the time when it was during COVID, my parents were having like a revival in a park. And it was like they were praying hard. Then my brother, like the story that I told you at the beginning, my brother came and told me that. And I was like, wow, yeah, I mean, I have to get back to God and just start giving my life again. And I just decide to, even though it was hurtful, because it hurt to pride, that you are like, wow, you are trying to make it. And you feel that you had accomplished all of this. That for the society, you know how we feel the pressure of being somebody?
Yep.
You know, we want to be always somebody. I don't know why, but just I think it's in our nature. We want to be a leader. We want to be somebody. And, you know, in some place you are working, you know, you want to just feel you are someone. Or maybe being seen, I don't know. So I was like, man, for when you think for the society, what is success? So I was a really successful guy at the time. I had played soccer for several years, made it almost to the main leagues. I was a lawyer. I had accomplished my master career. And in the time, I had accomplished several certifications in human rights. You know, all kind of titles that you want to just put in your curriculum or whatever. But nothing wasn't enough. Nothing. Anything. Anything was really helping me. Anything was like, man, I was living without a purpose. Even though you were creating your own purpose, because that's how we think if we do this, if we start working on this, we are, you know, doing our purpose and we are creating our own purpose in life. No.
Yep.
So we think that it's going to be our life. We're going to be doing, you know, psychologist work or lawyer career work or litigation case or doing this or professional or whatever you are and whatever you are. If you are not with God, if He's not leading you, anything is going to be enough. Nothing is going to be enough. Sorry. Nothing.
That's a true word. That's a true word right there. And so, Rob, you mentioned your parents were holding kind of like a revival in the park. Is that where you laid everything down and said, all right, I'm coming back to you, God?
Yeah, that helped me. And of course, a friend of them who is a pastor as well, he helped me to come out from that place, from that maybe the dark season where I was, that it took too long to come out. Yeah, they helped me. I cried out and I cried and I wanted to overcome so many things. One of them, maybe pornography, that is one of the, you know, biggest problems.
Yeah.
When you get messed up with a bunch of stuff, you fall into that. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's very easy because you are just right there on the edge. So that holds you from, I don't know, for how many years, from really overcome all your life that you are living. Because you know what? When I met those kind of people, they tell you that you can overcome and live a godly life, you know, because we see now how the world works, that the environment, if you want to be an ecologist, you have to do this and this and this. But it's all a bunch of hypocrisy. When they tell you, you know, you shouldn't consume plastic, but you are just smoking.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you shouldn't do this, but you are drinking a beer. And it's, you know, the beer is worse than drinking a coffee, for example, you know, for the environment. So when you are in this kind of environment, they tell you that just during your peace that you have in yourself is going to make you overcome everything, you know, and just you can do it for yourself. Nobody can really help you. I mean, only Jesus can help you. If you're trying to do something else out of Him, you're not going to make it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, they kind of switch this spiritual life, you know, like they use this spiritual life to show so many things. For them to be like kind of, you know, righteousness, if you're going to call it. I don't know. But another thing really helps. I mean, you have to live this life through him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if I make sense.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying. Yeah. It's not about doing a checklist and, you know, do A, B, C, D, E, and that's going to get you fulfilled and that's going to make you happy. That's going to get you righteous. No, it's fully surrendering yourself over to Jesus Christ and living for him and him alone. And that's when you actually do start to feel fulfilled. That's when you do find your purpose and meaning in life. And so what was that like for you, Rob, once you finally surrendered over to Christ? And it sounds like your parents, you know, played a big role, and they had some pastor friends as well that really helped you through some difficult things there, you know, with mental health, with addiction. What was that like when you finally said yes to Christ and you started to find that freedom by walking with him?
Yeah, I remember that I was, you know, in my room, I was trying to overcome everything, really surrender my life, my purpose, my reason to live, what I wanted to be. You know, I was like, because I remember that during 2020, we were barely working in the law firm with my dad because everything had been shut down, and so things wasn't going very well. So I made the isolated decision that I didn't have that much to do. Really pushed me, you know, towards him, to see him. And I remember that I started talking with Tori around at the end of 2020, maybe 2020, the beginning of 2021 or something like that, again, because we were friends. And I was telling her, I remember that I was still looking for to do something else, to go and try to find something else to do. And I wanted to do a doctorate. Now, because, you know, I was thinking, well, maybe if I do this, that's going to fulfill me. And I remember that I told Tori about this. And she was my friend at the time. And she told me, do you think that that's going to really fulfill you? Do you think that after you accomplish that, you're going to feel fulfilled? You know, it's a simple question. And I was like, wait, man, you're right. I don't think so. That's going to make it. So she told me, no, you surrender. Surrender your life. Keep surrendering to how you are living. Even though if you fall again, just go back to him and he will help you to overcome whatever, you know, any kind of sin you are dealing, any kind of addiction you are dealing, he will help you to overcome that. But what I didn't do in the past was, you know, when I fall, I thought that, well, he's mad with me.
Yeah.
He's not going to hurt me again. So that put me like far from him again, living the kind of life that I wasn't supposed to live. But this time when I really surrendered everything, I was like, okay, you know, even though if I fall again, I'm going to come back to him. And I did it. And then I remember my mom came and she told me like, hey, I need you to... She gave me an advice, you know, like about how we have to give our tithe to God and offerings and all of that. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I had tried before and anything really didn't work. When, you know, nothing that we can see, you know, because we usually, as a human being, we want to see.
Right.
We want to see it working. Like if we're investing money, we want to see the money working, you know, like the money coming back, the cash. So I had tried before, so I thought like, well, maybe I'm gonna start doing it. And I remember, you know, things started working kind of well in the law firm again after COVID. I was working with my dad. I started working with my dad, and he started paying me like, I don't know, $25 a week or something like that. Nothing really, because he was teaching me something, you know. It was a wonderful time, but even though I started, you know, sowing, when the money came, I started sowing to God, giving my tithe, because I wanted to really overcome everything and just fully surrender and just seeing the Lord and God work in my life, you know, more than what I could accomplish, more than what I could be, you know, as a human being, like, you know, what you want to be here. She's wanting to be with him. She's be close to him in a way, in a pure way, that she's like, you know what? The world tells you all of this, that you are not going to make it if you don't try to do this. But if you really give your life since the first moment when you have the opportunity to truly surrender, man, you're going to save so much time and so much pain.
Right. Yeah. You know, as we're talking, Rob, I just kind of get the sense that all throughout your life, it seemed like you were always striving. You were striving to, you know, become the best soccer player you could be. You were striving to, you know, get your degrees and become a lawyer. And you were striving to find happiness and, you know, freedom from addiction and depression, anxiety. But, you know, when we come to God and we surrender, there is no more striving. Because we, you know, once we surrender, we are forever loved by Him the same. You know, His love for us doesn't change. Right. And so what was that like for you, man? Like, did you kind of start to realize that where, hey, like there's freedom in me just being me and letting the Lord guide me instead of feeling like I got to take life, you know, in my hands and try to make something happen?
Yeah, I mean, what I realize is like, I think when we are not in Him, we feel we don't have a purpose in life. So we try to create this purpose for ourselves.
Yep.
What we think would be the best, how we can be somebody, you know, how we can be seen, as I was telling you. So realizing that it doesn't matter what you all the talents you have, what you can accomplish, what you can achieve, what you can be. But if you don't have Him, man, you have nothing.
You do.
You don't have.
Yeah, really have nothing.
Yeah, you can have everything. You can be whoever you want. But at the end of the day, you may be in your room with a bunch of things, you know, a bunch of titles, a bunch of money in your bank account, but feeling like a nothing.
Yeah.
So you have to have the fulfillment of Him, of His love. And you know that He loves you. Because who you are, because you are His creation, you are His son. And then He's going to start adding everything. She's giving you the reason, the reason that you have in this life, you know, that is just following Him and she's spreading the gospel. Doing, you know, even if you have to work in this, you are working for Him in a way because you're also spreading, you know, love and the gospel to others. So, it's like the reason is just Him in any areas where you are.
Right. Well, man, I just think it's so cool too how God used your future wife to help bring you to the Lord. I mean, it sounds like that was a really pivotal conversation. You were looking for advice. Hey, maybe I'll just go and get my doctorate. And she asked you, well, is that really going to make you happy? And you acknowledge no, and she invited you to just surrender in that moment. And so how cool, you know, that God was using Victoria even before she was your wife.
And what is crazy is she came. I don't know if she had ever been that close to my city. But when I was, you know, trying to change my life, she came close to my city, like 2 hours from where I was living. So I told my parents, hey, my friend who is an evangelist is coming close by. If we want to go, we can go. She's inviting us to go to come to the revival that they are throwing in Coatzacoalcos, Veracruz. My parents were like, oh, yeah, we're going. I was kind of, you know, on the, maybe I wasn't sure if I wanted to go or not, but something told me, yeah, you got to go. I was, okay, I'm going. And I went. And I received so much freedom. And of course, we couldn't really talk either because my English wasn't, well, right now it's better. But I mean, that time was like, we couldn't even say, how are you? Mm. You know, we couldn't really talk more than 2 sentences. So she came close. One of her friends gave me a word. Like, you know, to realizing more what I was, you know, how I should be doing things. That word really hit me. I was like, well, you're right. I mean, I was, you know, in the beginning of all of that, my process was changing, really. And then, yeah, I mean, that was like really shocking that she came close. You know, we tried to talk, but we couldn't really talk. And then, you know, the time passed. We established communication again, you know, like a friend, like a talking again. And then I came to visit here in around October for the first time that I came to America, to the United States, to visit her as a friend, you know, just to see how things, what she was doing. She invited me to come. And I remember when I came here, that was it. You know, if I had something left over from the past, I remember this is super cool because they did a revival here. I think for 3 or 4 nights. So I came, that was the main reason for me to come to that revival. And I remember that she was talking. She was preaching or ministering. I don't know. She was talking or preaching maybe. As soon as she was preaching, I felt something coming from the thought, no, the from the feet, from my feet, from all the way from the toe, I think that's how you say
it. Yep.
All the way from the bottom to the top, that left me like this. I mean, nobody really had to put that, you know, a hand on me. I didn't have to shake or do all of that. It was something, because I was telling God, like, I don't want to be like those kind of people. It's just, you're going to free me from something else, you know, from something that is left over that I wanted really, you know, to release. I don't want to do that. I mean, I just wanted you to do it in a, you know, in a special way, if you want to call it like that. And so I was just sitting, praying, you know, just maybe what I was praying was very, it moved him because it came from my heart and I really wanted to, you know, wanted really to release everything or maybe clean me, I don't know. But man, I remember that sensation, that feeling was like, I felt something came out.
Wow.
Crazy.
God delivered you.
Yeah.
God delivered you, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe it. I told her and we were like, yeah, he delivered me completely. And then I was like, God, I'll do anything you want. I mean, I don't care about anything else. I don't care what you want me to do. If I have to be here in my city, if I have to work as a lawyer, if I have to because I have a little coffee business as well, do this, whatever you want to do. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. But really, when I had started my yes, like really, this is my yes. I want to truly surrender my life to you, not caring anything else, not caring titles, not caring what I was supposed to be, who I was to be, you know,
yeah.
Those kind of things, not caring even about what you dress, what you don't dress, which brand you wear, you know, all of that, that pretty much tells you, man, when you release all of that, it's like a bunch of water, cold water in your body that is just, you feel and you see that nothing really cares. No, nothing is really important. Anything really.
Right. Right. So, wow, you have this radical experience at a revival there in Kentucky, where Victoria is at.
Yeah.
And so that's cool. I mean, yeah, you go to Mexico, to America for the first time, and the first state you go to is Kentucky. You know, a lot of people want to go to California, New York.
Right.
No, we're just going to go to Kentucky because that's where revival is, right? That's where revival is.
Yeah, I mean, you know what is crazy? I had my visa, my tourist visa, because you have to have a visa to come from a foreign country. And you have to do all this process. And I had my visa for maybe, I think I had been having my visa for maybe 4 years before I came here for the first time. And I had never used it. Never. That was the first time that I used it to come to the United States. Because I never, you know, saw America like a, you know, like an achievement, like a dream. I wasn't really dreaming. I was living here one day or anything like that. I just came here because the grace of God. I mean, there is no other way to describe. My language is his gift, I think. I believe it. Because once, you know, he delivered me, that's when I start really communicating with Tori.
Oh, wow.
That's when we start communicating, like talking. Like when I start talking.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Wow.
We were talking, having conversations. And of course, it was like a something that was a progression. It was growing up. But yeah, that was the beginning. And then she came to see me to my city around the next spring. We received word that we were getting married soon. So everything happened after I really surrendered everything. He started adding everything, you know, a godly relationship. My dreams didn't really care, but he started fulfilling me, my dreams, giving me first his salvation, his grace, his love for who he is. That fulfilled me since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started adding me more, you know. Then, of course, I helped her and her brother to do ministry in Mexico. And then it was just growing up. It was like it's not a feeling, because I don't want to call it a feeling, because God is not a feeling, but it's just a fulfillment.
Yeah.
That he puts in you, you know, like, wow, this is like, because I always cared about helping people, even though I was pretty much lost, but everything that I wanted to do, like, you know, I got into this human right thing, because I wanted really to help people, help community, help how to improve and develop my people from the mountains, how they can get a better life and stuff like that. You know, like making, I don't know, maybe project, you know, social project to help them. So I always care about, you know, the people, because that's what my father told me, because he's a lawyer, but even he works for the farmers. I help mostly, you know, he doesn't care. If he gets paid sometimes, he's like, he does it because he wants to help. And sometimes people just come with a turkey and give him a turkey. It's like, yeah, that's the payment.
Nice.
So, you know, so he told me that kind of life, like just helping community, helping people. So when I came to Jesus, I realized how important is, you know, helping others through him to get their healing, their salvation, and of course their fulfillment, because it's like we don't realize that.
Right. Yeah. It's incredible when you live just that servant lifestyle, right? Like the world tells you when you serve, you should expect something in return, and it just doesn't feel as good as it is when you actually are on the opposite end, when, you know, as far as you're the one being served. But, you know, the kingdom is upside down like that. Jesus says that, you know, you know, he came to serve, and, you know, that it's better to give than to receive. And so, yeah, it's incredible hearing how God just was transforming your heart and aligning, your desires and dreams more into his desires and dreams for you. And it sounds like one of those desires was he wanted you and Victoria to get married. You guys got a prophetic word, you know, during that visit when she came down, and you guys got a prophetic word saying that you guys were going to get married. So how long after that, Rob, did you pop the question?
Well, I remember she came here. I mean, she went there, sorry. Of course she left, and I was really like, man, am I getting married? I mean, you know, are we getting married for sure? So I started fasting during that time, just to see if it was, you know, if it was from the Lord, and if we were supposed to move that quick, because it was pretty quick. So I was like, well, and I remember I had a dream where I believe he came to me. Because of course I was at then, you know, I started working, I had given my tithe, you know, my offerings to the Lord, and he started blessing me. But even though I felt that it wasn't enough, because I wanted, you know, when he told me that we were getting married, I was like, man, what am I gonna buy a ring? they're so expensive. You know, I started looking for rings and they were just outrageous. And I wanted to give her like a really nice ring, you know, something that she deserved, because that's how I felt it, that she really deserved something, because the life that she decided to pick, she decided to live. So I was like, man, I have to really get her something that is going to be worth it, of her hand. Well, I was really struggling with that, and I thought I wasn't making it, because when she came, we went to see rings, and they were just so expensive. I wasn't making it. He gave me a dream where he came and he showed me all this tent, like a market covered with tents, full with diamonds, full with rings, full with, you know. I was in the market, and then this guy came, you know, he was guiding me from my hand. He grabbed my hand and he was guiding me in the market, you know, showing me all the rings, the precious stones, rocks. And it was like, I was amazed, like, wow, this is all beautiful. This is amazing. But how am I going to afford this? I was like, man, I only have this amount in my bank account. I don't know if I'm going to make it. Well, I remember that this guy came. He went to sit. He sat, you know, like in a place, in a bench maybe. He lead me and showed me this stone that it was sitting on a rock. It was like a raw diamond. And he told me, like, the rock that you are looking for is sitting over there. And I was, And I went to see it, and I look at it. I was like, wow, it's beautiful. But how much does it cost? I asked him, you know, and then he went to see it, and he sat, and he was just kind of laughing. His hair was kind of short. Like, you know, like, you're not going to buy me, you know. I didn't know who he was until I told Tori my dream. We believe it was Jesus walking me through this market of diamonds, showing me the future diamond that she would be getting.
So cool.
So he sat and I told him how much, and he told me the exact amount that I had in my bank account saving for the rock. But it wasn't that much. It was like $500, you know, that I had been working hard to save the money. I was like, what do I have to do to get it? Like, you just have to want it. I was like, okay, I want it. And then the dream ends. And then I told Tori in the next morning, and I think after a couple of days after the dream happened, of course, she can tell you this story about her diamond, but a diamond was given to her way in the back, but they thought they lose it. Well, the diamond somehow appears again. And it was sitting in the top of a luggage. Something like that. Like in the top. Because her mom had tried to look for the diamond in the same luggage, in the same backpack, and she couldn't find it. But after two or one day after the dream, she found it.
Oh, wow.
It was just sitting there on the top. Like, you know, when you open like the backpack and there it is. We were like, well, there is a diamond. There is no other doubt. There is no other, you know, that we're not, this is not happening. Okay, let's make it happen. So I came here again. We went to Africa. We came here. We went to Mexico. That's when we got engaged, around July, I believe, the first or the second, around that age. And then we went to Mexico. Then we came back here. And then, yeah, we got married. Two weddings, and it's been wonderful. I mean, after you realize, and after I realized that, it's like, man, you know, sometimes I don't regret about the life. I mean, I regret the life that I was living just because my wife. But it's like, even though when you are lost, he is with you, because he cares about you. He's not caring about me, but he's leading you. You just have to surrender your life. Truly surrender, let him to take the wheel, I think it will lead you wherever you, I mean, I don't know. I don't know where you want to go. Where, I mean, maybe your college is right there in your own home, in your own town, in your own place. But once you have it, you see life different.
Yeah.
And the reason, the purpose of life is just amazing. That is a radical change.
Right.
Fierce in your heart. Right? So it's like, just, man.
Right. When you fully give him control over, watch what he does. I mean, look what he did in you, Rob. I mean, you know, shortly right. after giving your life to the Lord, you're getting married. You know, you're getting married to, you know, this woman that you couldn't even communicate with not too long prior to that. And now here you are getting married to her. And so I just want to clarify, are you saying that the dream that you had, that the ring that you saw in that dream is the same ring Victoria now wears on her hand?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's the same. But when I saw in the dream, it just was their stone.
The stone, have, you know, yeah.
The full, yeah. It was only the stone. But when I saw it, I told her, "What does the kind of ring that I saw in my dream?"
Oh, that is so cool.
Yeah, somehow. I mean, he had provided that ring since story was maybe 15 years old, something crazy like that. You know, when you see like, man, we were really meant to be together since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
But it's like when you realize, do you want to keep stopping God working? Do you want to really surrender and let him work and save so much time, save so much pain, save so much, you know, this walking, you know, that is kind of tough or kind of difficult. So it's like, just let him take the wheel, let him take the control over your life. And you're going to save so much time. I mean, time is precious.
Yeah. So, man, yeah, I want to go back to the dream again, because that is crazy. So Jesus shows you that diamond in your dream, and you're kind of like, hey, that's really cool, but like, I can't afford that. You know, how much does it cost? And all, you know, he said to you, you just got to want it. And so you said, hey, I want it. Meanwhile, Victoria has had this ring since about 15 years old, but it had gotten lost. Mm-hmm. And they just could not find it for however long. And then around that time that you had that dream, it's just that ring appears just on the luggage. My goodness, that is, I love that. That is that crazy. I mean, that's just God right there.
Yeah, we have so many stories like that about provision, you know, the wedding and all what has been happening in our life. Of course, the house where we are, the car that we drive, even the dog that I have, is just everything has been pretty much given for us. Like that. It's like, man, you know, when I was working, they made you think like, yeah, you have to work hard. We are the kind of culture that we have, you know, like everybody, but you have to work down there double to achieve anything, a house, a car, a wife, you know, like you have to be somebody to have this kind of life. So when you realize that, man, it's just a positive, it just works in the other way, give the life to Jesus first, he's going to fulfill you, give you the purpose of life, and then he's going to start, as soon as you start giving him really, truly everything, he's going to start adding everything that you need. You're going to need for the walk, for the way that you're, for the path that you're walking with. So
yeah,
it's just amazing.
He's a good dad who delights in giving us good gifts. Oh, yeah. And, you know,
yeah, for sure.
It was around, again, shortly after you guys got married, that's when I had interviewed Victoria. And then shortly after I interviewed Victoria, again, you guys are in prime honeymoon phase right now. And, you know, everyone kind of has that vision of what it's like to be newlyweds and, oh, it's so exciting. And, you know, all this, you know, just new love and just new experiences. And it's usually like a really blissful time, but man, the enemy really tried to take you guys out, and more so you out, Rob, shortly after you guys got married. So tell us, I don't want to give anything away, so I'm going to have you tell the story, but man, what did the enemy try to do to you?
We had been married for, I think, a month. I don't know, very short time. We were trying to move. We had tried to move to our home, but we couldn't make it because it was too cold and the heat wasn't really working well. So we had to stay with Carmel, Tori's mom, my wife's mom, for a little bit of time. The day of the wreck, we were moving into our home. That's what happened. That's when it happened. So I remember that we had to drive two cars to get back because we were it was around Christmas time. So Carmel was having like a cookie exchange that they call it. You know, we were just, you know, just go to a cooking towards her home. Well, when I was maybe, I don't know, less than a mile, maybe a quarter of a mile from her home, I was going, barely going through the green light when this truck ran into the red light and just hit me on my side, you know, my left side. I was driving Tori's Kia. She had driven her dad's car. She was already home. So this guy just ran the red light, hit me on the side, which I don't remember. I mean, when this happened, I don't remember anything. I was going through the green light, forward, barely going, you know, just barely speeding. And this guy just hit me and knocked me out for maybe a few hours.
Wow.
I remember I woke up in the hospital. I think the accident was around 4. And I woke up in the hospital around 10, 11, asking Tori what I was doing in there. I mean, what was going on? My mind couldn't really understand what was happening. And I had, of course, internal bleeding in the pelvic area, several broken parts in the pelvic area as well. I couldn't move. I was in bed for maybe a few months. I mean, 3 months, 4 months. No, let me see, 2 months. And then I started walking again, but I couldn't really move my. I think the worst was the right one was completely out.
Your right leg.
But I had to be, you know, yeah, my right leg. I have to be on a wheelchair. It was just horrible, horrible. We had to go back to Carmel's house to stay there. They were helping us, you know, with the healing season. Of course, the shocking for Tori that we were really, you know, barely going into our life, into our marriage. When all of this happened, that it was crazy. I mean, I don't know. I mean, but we truly surrendered that. We gave it to God. Like, you know what? We're going to trust you. We don't understand why. And sometimes we don't have to. But we know you are working and you are just, you know, I'm really, truly surrender everything that you want me to. So you take the control. You take all of this pain and he healed me. And pretty much, in 2 months, I was walking again without the cane.
Which, right. So 2 months after this, you're walking again with no cane. And I recall Tori posting about that because that was like a miracle in and of itself. Like you weren't supposed to be walking and moving that quickly, right? Like what was the original time frame that they gave you?
Around 6 months.
Wow. Yeah, 6 months they expected you, you know, for it to take before you walk again. And here you are 2 months walking after and I saw the pictures and when this comes out, you know, maybe, Rob, you can send me those pictures. I'll post it on my social media as well. So people can see the visual, but like that car was just beyond wrecked. Right. And so here you are literally 2 months after that. And like a month after, you know, this is all happening. And now you're walking, no cane, no assistance. Like if that's not the miracle working, healing power of God, I don't know what is.
Yeah, it was crazy because this guy, I don't know how fast he was going, but I believe he was going probably 80 miles per hour. And of course, it was a truck. It was a huge truck. And he destroyed the car, the side of the car. That the only thing that I had from the wreck, you know, after the wreck, of course, after the broken part, it was maybe a few pieces of, you know, when I covered maybe my face, because I don't remember anything. I don't remember the wreck. I don't remember when he hit me. That completely knocked me out. So maybe I could have covered my face with my hand, and I have few little pieces here, and they went away in a couple of weeks. This guy could have killed me. Yeah, easily. Yeah. Like that, like in a second, that's when I realized, man, that was another shocking, like, what is really important in this life, you know, like, man, the life is just short like this, like the Bible talks, you know, like just short like a light. So you have the decision to give this life to him or not, because where do you want to live next life? So it's like, if he wanted to take me, he could have, you know, but there is a reason for everything, I believe. So yeah, it was crazy. It was traumatizing for, I think, mostly for Tori, for my wife, that it was, you know, we were newlywed.
Yeah, I remember I reached out to Tori shortly after the wreck, because she was posting about it and asking for prayer. And God just really put it on my heart that you guys wanted to get pregnant, like, pretty, you know, early on in your marriage. And obviously with the accident that you had, I mean, your pelvic was crushed. You know, it makes baby making difficult, right? You know, keeping it PG. But I just felt led to pray specifically for that the enemy isn't going to take you out, the marriage out, and he's not going to take, like, your seed out either. Like, you're still going to bring life into this world. And you had, again, Rob, just this miraculous recovery from this accident. And like you said, like, God just, even in that season, continued to bless you guys. You mentioned your dog, Rico. I think we heard him barking a couple of times in the background there. He gave you Rico, who was kind of like your therapy buddy, your healing buddy throughout the accident.
He helped me to really, because he came around January, because it was, of course, very difficult for me. I mean, it was horrible for me, not being able to walk, not being able to do anything in home, I was a husband now. I don't now think like a husband. Don't even think like a single guy, you know, just like a husband who has to provide, who has to help your wife. And now after you are married, you are this kind of burden, like, you know, like they have to help you. Of course, it was kind of difficult, like, man, how can I realize that? How can I, you know, overcome that? How can you just have to give it up? I mean, he's like, God, you are in control of all of this. You really have to help me go through, because I don't know if I'm going to make it without you. So I was really, you know, falling into this. It was hitting me hard. And then, of course, Rico, someone is just calling in the morning, like they were giving this dog for free. And I believe he's, you know, pure German Shepherd. Beautiful. And when I saw him, I was like, okay, he has to be us. He has to be with us. And he came, of course, he helped me to be more active, you know, getting out of bed, walking more. So I believe that the Lord used him to really help me to overcome and showing me that I was really healed. You know, because the first after the wreck, I went to church, maybe I think the next Sunday, and I believe that he healed me. We believe that he healed me right there. But you really have to prove it. You know, you really have to believe it and just take that step of faith. So I believe
he put faith into action.
Right. To put the faith into action. It was hard.
Yeah, no, and like you said, just another example of God giving you a good gift and providing for you. And then the vehicle as well. I remember Tori was kind of texting me of just like, well, these are some of the vehicles we're looking at. And then God ended up blessing you with an even nicer vehicle than what you were looking at, and an even better vehicle. And that's, again, just the nature of God. And again, one of the best gifts of all, though, you guys got pregnant. How long after your accident, Rob, did you guys find out that you were pregnant?
I think the accident was in December the 20th. We found out, don't get me wrong, I think around March.
3 months after someone that could have killed you and you get pregnant.
Yeah, we were afraid, you know, because we couldn't have children or have anything, or, you know, stuff like that. But no, I was healed. I was going. So
that is amazing. I mean, and again, putting that in perspective, doctors didn't even expect you to walk till that June. That would have been 6 months after the wreck. And here you are making a baby, you know, in March. And so little Judah, he was born, I guess I don't know the exact date when he was born. I know it was recently. When
November
was he born?
November 28th.
Rob, what was that like for you when you got to hold little Judah in your arms for the first time, and like it's dawning on you that, wow, like I'm a father and this is my son? Like, what was that like for you?
Unbelievable. Something that, I mean, when you become a father, you know, we are in God's creation. We are a representation of Him. When we become a father or parent, we realize and understand how the Father sees us. You know, like a little baby who needs to be protected. That's how he feels. So I realized that, wow, this is the best thing ever. It's like the best, I don't know, the best experience, the best sensation, the best moment of your life when you're holding your baby life. This is all what matters. I mean, this is how God sees us, you know, in the same way when we look at, when we look to our child for the first time, that we need to protect him, we need to take care of him, we don't want anything to happen to him. So that's how he sees us, you know, even though when we get lost, he's right there in the midst of all of that. And you just have to get back. But yeah, it's like something that I can, I don't know if there's an adjective that we can use it to describe the sensation, because it's pretty unique.
Sure. Yeah, that's just amazing. And that kid is going to be a powerhouse for the Lord. I'm telling you. I mean, you got Victoria, who in and of herself is such a powerful woman of God. He's got you as your dad. And what's dawning on me, Rob, is that you've only really been saved, I guess, you know, for a few years now. I mean, when you fully surrendered, when you fully gave your life over to the Lord, that was just a few years ago. And to hear how you're talking about the Lord now and how passionate you are and how hungry you are for Him, man, like Judah having you guys as his parents, watch out, world. He's going to be a powerhouse for the kingdom. And Rob, this has been just so cool to finally get to connect with you. We've been following each other on social media for a while now. And so to finally hear your story over this last, you know, hour and a half or whatever it's been, has been just so faith building, even for me. What I'm taking coming away from your story, Rob, is just how good of a father God is. You know, when you think about the Father and how He loves and how He provides and how He protects, and your life is a shining example of God the Father and all of His attributes being poured out onto you, Rob. As you look back at everything we talked about and you think about the goodness of God in your life, what comes to mind?
He is right there working always. He's always working. And even though you realize and do things you know, on your own self, in your own kind of mind, thinking that you're doing it right. He's in the midst of all of that. And I believe there is always somebody knocking, you know, at your door. He's knocking at your door through somebody else. That's how it was for me. I had so many people around me, like they were knocking. He wanted to knock, and just, he wanted me to know him more in a truly and radical way, with no religion, with no religion, idea, rules or anything, you know, because that thing really puts you a little bit afar from what the really kingdom is and who he really is. That's why he came here, to break all rules, all religion. So when you see that part, it's like, man, he's a really good father. Because I'm relating this, when I did my master, I never thought I would be using it. So, you know, I was doing it that because I thought it would be really good for curriculum, for, you know, something. But now when I'm here right now and I'm starting to work, since I received my social security number a couple of months ago, and I'm using now my business administration with a company that I joined with a friend that we pretty much started. So it's like, man, he was right there, you know? He was right there because he knew where he would be using that talented. He knew where he would be using that. He knew everything, you know? He knew I was getting married with Tori since beginning of time, if you wanna put it like that way. That the point was, and you know, Joe following him and doing all this life that we are doing for him, that was the point. And then he used all the talents for his kingdom, for his glory, to glorify him, because there is no other reason. It's like, I realized that he was always in control. He had been always in control. He was always right there, you know, making me like, hey, I'm right here. You just have to look at me. Removing any kind of idea of religion, remove that. Just come to me and I'm going to show you who truly I am, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's it right there, man. He's waiting with open arms. We just got to come to him and he'll accept us in. And when he does, we get transformed. We become changed. And so, yeah. Yeah, just surrender. And I pray that as people are listening to this, that they're even surrendering right now after hearing what God has done in your life after surrender, that they would want that same thing for them as well, that they would want that freedom and that peace that comes with fully surrendering over to the Lord. And man, when you do, there's no bounds for what God can do in your life. Rob's story is a perfect example of that. Rob, how can people follow you? Do you want to give out like your Instagram so that people can kind of follow your journey and see what the Lord's going to continue to do with you?
I think my wife posts more than me, but it's fine if they want to go to follow me.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, if they want to, I don't know.
What do you think? So I'll drop both Rob and Victoria's social media links in the show notes. Yeah, Victoria posts more. But Rob, this has been amazing. Thank you so much, man, for being willing to come on. I know this is your first time kind of like in this kind of format, sharing your testimony. And so thank you for trusting me to help share your story. And man, just God bless you and your little family.
You too. Thank you so much, Terry, for the opportunity. And I hope this is going to be a blessing for whoever is listening. Just truly surrender. Truly surrender your dreams. Truly surrender your life. Truly surrender anything. Anything what you care that is not him. Just do it. Just try it. Just test him. And he'll prove to you. He'll prove himself to you in a truly way that you will never imagine. You will never expect it. He'll be right there. Even if things get tough sometimes, he'll be right there. You're going to have him on your side, on your behalf. Even if you have an accident, something horrible happened, he'll be with you. He'll be with you. He'll be with you. And you'll know he's right there. You will have him. You will have eternal life. That is all what matters in this life. And you'll be ready if he takes you to the rain tomorrow. or any day. That's eternity is the most important, where you're going to live. Amen. Because this life is short like this. Thank you so much, Terry, for having me, and have a blessed day. Bye-bye, guys.
Well, like I said in the intro, guys, you can just tell that Rob has a heart of gold, and it's so cool to see how the Lord has been working in his life over these last few years especially. I mean, I think it's clear that the enemy is terrified at the plans God has for Rob and his family because of the warfare he went through so soon after getting married. But man, Jesus always has the final say. He is in the business of restoring hope and life to situations that appear dire and dead. And Rob's story is evidence of just that. Check out the show notes to follow Rob and Victoria, as well as follow Testimonies with Terry. And please share this testimony with others. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. That's it for this week's episode, but I'll be back next week with another. In the meantime, remember, your story matters. Share it to glorify God and weaponize it to kick Satan's butt.